This partial government shutdown continues into its third week, and the hardest hit are people who can ill afford it. If the government is not reopened before March, millions of Americans who receive SNAP benefits, the nation's food stamp program, could have their assistance disrupted or scaled way back. We're looking at the ramifications here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said Tuesday that the agency would rely on a budget provision to give states the money for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, for February ahead of time to get around the expiration of federal appropriations. So let's bring in Helena Bademiller-Evich. She is a senior food and agriculture reporter for Politico Pro. She's been writing about this, following the developments. Helena, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the latest here? What do we know about SNAP benefits, the status of SNAP and other nutrition assistance programs?
So I think first it's important to just remember who is on SNAP. So it's a really big program. Most people know it as food stamps. It serves nearly 39 million people, the majority of which are children, the elderly, or people with a disability. So this is a really big program that affects a lot of people in every state. And basically what has happened is there's been a lot of uncertainty as the shutdown has continue to drag on, because the program costs about $4.7 billion per month to give everyone the benefits that they need to help purchase groceries every month. So what USDA said this week is because the government shutdown continues and our appropriations are expiring at the end of January, they found a really obscure budget provision and basically found nearly $5 billion to cover February and give SNAP recipients benefits early. So SNAP recipients are actually going to see their benefits toward the end of January for February. So it'll be an early scheduled release.
So they're going to be available
in March. Yeah.
Yeah. Available on January 20th. So that's earlier than usual. So how does that work with the timing of it all?
There are a lot of questions we still don't have answers to. A lot of folks are wondering what happens. A lot of states stagger their benefits, so they don't give them all on the first, because otherwise grocery stores in some places would be completely overrun. So a lot of states stagger, you know, how they give them. Some people might get them in the first week or the second week. So it is definitely going to be a big change for a lot of these families, and we haven't gotten answers about how it's going to work in the weeks to come. So if you just got your benefits in mid-January, there's going to be some weirdness as far as how these are doled out. But states are working really, really in overtime trying to figure out all these logistics to make sure that everyone gets their benefits. We are right now being told that everything should work out for February, so that if you are on SNAP, you should not be concerned about your February benefits. And the government has said it's looking for options for how to fund March if it comes to that point. But they're really saying, look, Congress and leaders in Washington need to figure this out. They need to fund the government. So the hope is the shutdown will end before we have to deal with March.
And what about applications for SNAP? Are they still open? Because I think I read somewhere 95% of workers at USDA are off the job.
Yeah, so that is true, that 95% of the nutrition staff at USDA has been furloughed. But it's important to remember that SNAP is mostly administered at the state level. So if you find yourself in hard times and you think you need to apply for SNAP benefits, you can still do that. They are still accepting applications. We've started to hear reports of now federal employees who are seeking SNAP benefits because they, are not expecting their paychecks. So you still can apply. They are saying anyone who applies and qualifies will still get their benefits just as normal. So for right now, things appear to be operating as normal. The big question is what happens if this continues to drag on. The government does have a $3 billion reserve fund for SNAP, but as I mentioned earlier, it costs nearly $5 billion to pay out all the benefits. So whether or not USDA has other money they can use or other mechanisms to keep this going remains to be seen, but there is a lot of concern. I mean, food banks, anti-hunger advocates, people who work on this program understand how broad it is, and they really would like more clear answers about what the plan is going forward.
We're talking with Helena Bada-Miller-Evich. She is a senior food and agriculture reporter for Political Pro. Before this, she reported on Congress and the government for Food Safety News. You can call in 800-642-1234. Are you on food stamps? Do you rely on food stamps to get by? And what would happen to you and your family if you didn't have nutrition benefits? Are you concerned that the Agriculture Department will run out of money for food stamps? Will you have to choose between food and other expenses? And what could that mean for your life? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Helena, it's not just SNAP here that is caught in this partial government shutdown. There's also WIC for women and children. What is the impact on WIC?
That's a really great question. WIC does not get as much attention and coverage. Not as many people know about WIC, but WIC, which basically supports, it gives low-income families staple foods, infant formula, it helps support breastfeeding. It covers half of all babies born in the United States. So this is a far-reaching program, nutrition program, really targeted at pregnant women, infants, and young children. And there was a lot of concern about, you know, what was going to happen with WIC funding. USDA said this week WIC funding is also taken care of through the end of February, and they believe they have some extra funding to keep it going beyond that, but we still do not have clear answers for March. So it's in a very similar situation as the SNAP program. I also want to note that the school nutrition programs that serve, I think school lunch serves like 30 million children a day. The school lunch program and school breakfast programs, USDA has said, have funding to continue as normal through the end of March. So for right now, those programs are going to continue as normal, and we're not imminently worried about disruptions there. So I just want to note that because I know a lot of parents and families rely on those programs on a daily basis. So it's important to note that. There's so many questions that we're going to have to keep asking, you know, government officials as this drags on. I mean, there's just so many programs that normally are not affected in a shutdown. But if you get to a certain point, you start to see this sort of cascading impact in all of these programs that we normally don't even think about during shutdowns.
And you also see a shifting burden, perhaps, then onto states. States will have to somehow pick up the price tag and keep going here with these programs if the federal government continues to be on this situation of a partial government shutdown. Are states prepared to do this?
That's a really great question. And I think it's safe to say most states are absolutely not prepared to cover the cost of a program like SNAP. I mean, if a state gets $500 million in SNAP benefits. I mean, most states would have trouble randomly coming up with that kind of money for a month. This is an expensive program. WIC is definitely smaller in scale, so there might be a little bit more flexibility at the state level, but there is a lot of unanswered questions. There's a lot of uncertainty, and I do think it's important that WIC and SNAP recipients know that for right now, their benefits are not imminently affected. So I don't want to, you know, add to anxiety for low-income families.
Talking,
there is a lot of uncertainty in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talking with Helena Bada-Miller-Evich. She reports on food and agriculture for Politico Pro. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you concerned that the USDA would run out of money for food stamps come March? Will you have to choose between food and other expenses? Do you work in a school? How do you see federal food programs in action? Call in 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. More than 38 million people receive food stamps, and the government is guaranteeing funding for food stamps through February. But after that, there isn't a clear plan that we're aware of. The Department of Agriculture is one of the 9 federal agencies that shut down on December 21st. It's now guaranteeing funding for the nation's largest food aid program, SNAP benefits through February. We're talking about the ramifications here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Helena Bada-Miller-Evich is our guide. She is a senior food and agriculture reporter for Political Pro. And your thoughts on the shutdown as it pertains to nutrition, 800-642-1234. Have you gone hungry in the past? What do you remember about that time? And how did it affect your family? Do you see food assistance as a partisan issue? Is it best for Republicans and Democrats to compromise to keep benefits flowing, or should they take political sides here? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Helena, this isn't our first government shutdown, although it's longer than most. Historically, how have leaders handled food stamp benefits when federal operations are restricted?
Yeah, it's a great question. Food stamps are kind of a weird program because it's a mandatory entitlement program, which means that, you know, the parameters of the program are set in federal law and people who qualify get the benefits. There's no real question about that. But this is one of the few entitlement programs that requires appropriations. It's just a weird technicality that really hasn't been that much of an issue because they pass appropriations bills, you know, and they waive the funding through, and it has not really, only one time, I think back in 2015, did they start to worry they wouldn't have enough money for the next month. Food stamp benefits have never not gone out. So we're kind of entering an uncharted territory where the experts I talk to actually don't know what would happen if USDA has, let's say they have enough to do two-thirds of the benefits. Do they ration them, or do they only give them to two-thirds, you know, do the two-thirds of the recipients? I mean, there's just no guide for what will happen if push comes to shove. And they're legally obligated. They are legally obligated to give these benefits out. So there's a lot of questions.
Let's look at the politics of this for a moment and the optics here. The White House budget director Monday said they're trying to make this as painless as possible while still following the law. Does guaranteeing SNAP benefits help anyone politically in this budget battle? I mean, you know, here we are, Democrats versus Republicans, a border wall in the mix. Do elected leaders split along party lines when it comes to food stamps?
I think both sides see that any suspension of big government services like this or a risk of that puts additional pressure on political leaders to end the shutdown. And I think what we saw last week is White House officials were actually raising concern about SNAP potentially running out of money. And then a couple of days that later said, we're gonna find the money. Both Democrats and the White House were seizing on this. It was almost like each side thought that the specter of SNAP running out of money would raise, you know, their side's leverage against the other side. But I think what we saw happen is states panicked, low-income people panicked. There was a lot of confusion. And then USDA came back, I think, 3 days later and said, oh, we found the money for February. So it's very unclear to me, you know, in a political battle, who really gains the upper hand from raising big questions about whether or not SNAP benefits can continue. I mean, I think no matter what, it does put pressure on Washington to end the shutdown because so many people beyond federal workers, beyond people inside of Washington can be impacted by it.
You covered the passage of the most recent farm bill, and you write that it traditionally was a bipartisan effort that unites lawmakers over food stamps and farm subsidies. How has the farm bill become more political in recent years?
It's become a lot more political, I think in part as like the parties have polarized. There's definitely been a polarization, and I think the Democratic Party's also become skewing more urban, and the Republican Party's gotten stronger in rural places, so that's fueled it somewhat. But the last two cycles, we've had big political fights over the SNAP program, still known to many as food stamps, and how many people should be on it, and whether or not we should have stricter work requirements. And this last farm bill that Congress just passed, which ended up pretty much being status quo, keeping generally food and farm policy the same. There was a 10-month fight between Republicans and Democrats about whether or not you should impose stricter work requirements on food stamp recipients. And in the end, they didn't end up doing that because there wasn't enough political support to do it.
Yeah, so, and House Speaker Paul Ryan supported those work requirements for SNAP recipients, which, as you mentioned, didn't end up in the farm bill at the end. Governor Walker and Wisconsin Republicans are supportive of work requirements as well. How would increasing work requirements for SNAP benefits change this program in your view?
Well, they estimated that between the changes in stricter work requirements and also tightening up a few eligibility standards, that probably 1.5 million people would be dropped from the program. So out of 39 million people, that's a significant number, but it's not, it wouldn't have like cut SNAP in half nationally or anything like that. So I think anti-hunger groups were really worried that, able-bodied adults without dependents, which is this very specific population within SNAP, it's called ABODS in Washington. That's what the acronym is, able-bodied adults without dependents. And that just means you're, between the ages of 18 and 49, you don't have kids at home under, that are still in school, and you don't have a disability. And if you, the federal requirement is already that if you do not work at least 20 hours a week, on average, that you can't get SNAP for more than 3 months over the course of 3 years. And a lot of states have waived that. I believe Wisconsin is one of the ones that doesn't have any more waivers. So most people are already submitted to that work requirement. And a lot of anti-hunger groups think that that work requirement that we already have is too strict. They think that a lot of low-income people face barriers and challenges. Maybe their car's broken down. Maybe they don't have great jobs in their neighborhood. They work and they just don't make enough money and they don't want to deal with the paperwork of meeting a work requirement. It just adds another layer of requirements that low-income people have to meet. Conservatives say that it's a good thing. It encourages people to get back into the workforce if they have left it, especially in a time of low unemployment. So there's a heated debate about this, but ultimately this year, Washington ended up not making those work requirements stricter.
Let's go to Jonathan now with thoughts. Jonathan and Madison, good morning.
Hello, good morning. Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about how this is affecting the people that are producing the food, because I myself am a small vegetable farmer, and I'm applying for a microloan right now through the FSA, and that's being delayed because of the shutdown, and that could affect some deadlines that we have to meet to this year. So that's one thing that I'm kind of stressed about right now, and I'm sure there's many other farmers around the country that are feeling the same way.
Jonathan, if your microloan doesn't go through, what happens to you?
Well, we have a financing contingency for a piece of property that we're trying to purchase, and if we don't meet that deadline by March 5th, then another buyer is going to come in and purchase the property, and we won't be able to expand our operation and continuing to grow our business.
Jonathan, thank you so much for the call. Helena, there are a number of certainly issues here around food, even for producers as they trying to secure money.
Absolutely. And it's not just, there's loans, as Jonathan mentioned, that might help an operation expand their production. There's also operating loans that farmers can get financing from USDA to actually purchase what they need for their production year, for planting, for actually running their operation. So if this continues to drag on, we're going to see a lot of stress on many different levels. It's going to be researchers, scientists who are expecting grants, nonprofits that work on nutrition that were expecting grants, farmers that were expecting loans or maybe about to close on a loan in this case, in Jonathan's case. And Jonathan, you should definitely email me. We should talk about this more. This idea that USDA being closed puts business, kind of grinds business to a halt, is, I think, one of the undercovered parts of the shutdown. And the other thing is, if you're a big or even a small, you know, grain, let's say you grow corn or soybeans and you're eligible for trade aid payments that the Trump administration has pledged, you know, because of all the trade stress and the tariffs, those payments are also now halted. So there's kind of multiple impacts to agricultural producers of all types. And that's just one slice of USDA that we're talking about. So the impacts, I think, can be multiplied on quite a large scale.
Helena, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Helena Bottomiller-Evich is a senior food and agriculture reporter for Politico Pro. Up next, it's news. Then we talk about the femtech boom. Femtech is a startup industry marketing itself as a way for women to take control of their bodies and health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.